everyone, and welcome back to Season 3 of the Fanfiction Tapes. I'm your host today, Maya, pronouns she, her, and today I'm joined by...
Yeah, Dylan, hi, yeah, he, him. Go sports!
Badger, he, they, hello everybody.
And I'm our producer, Ian, pronouns he, him.
Today's episode is all about sports stories. And for those of you who knew me more than a year ago, or... aren't that into sports, might be wondering what the f*** I'm on about. And the answer is that there's actually a surprising amount of depth and narrative to what happens in sports to someone who... Well, it would be surprising to someone who doesn't watch much of it. And there's a, I think, a pretty good example of this. This is pretty much the reason this episode is happening. Badger, where are you on today?
Well, I wrote a story called Run at the Cup. It's about the little hockey team that could in the Arcane fandom. And as I was writing it, I got a lot of folks saying, hey, I don't know anything about hockey, but I'm here and I'm enjoying this. And it got me thinking, like, it was interesting because, like, there is so much, honestly, like writing fan fiction around sports, writing any story around sports is low key easy mode. Like it really, really is, because instead of you having to sit in the dark and bang your head against the wall, trying to figure out how to create tension and how to find a satisfying conclusion to your narrative and all that other good stuff that writers or creatives have to do, sports just kind of does it for you by saying, like, all right, so there's a score and a time limit, and if you win, that's good, and if you lose, well, that's bad. And just basically having your entire story roadmapped around that backdrop is, like, really, really... helpful, because you don't need to explain to an audience what a win or a loss is or why that's relevant. You instead can focus on things like, hey, why is everyone fist fighting on skates? Like, why is that a thing that occurs? And you can use your time to bring them into, like, nuances of the sports themselves. And I know that a lot of stories like to use sports as a backdrop. I don't necessarily think that's what we're talking about. We're talking about, like, actual, like, why are sports good stories kind of thing. And the easiest way to kind of, like, describe it is, like, if you've ever been a big fan of anime or, like, any sort of, like, shonen kind of, like, targeted at a younger male audience, like, action anime, and you get really, really excited for tournament arcs. So imagine nothing but tournament arcs. And that's sports, right? That's sports fandom. It's all very high stakes, winner take all, and everyone caring a lot. I think the two biggest ingredients for any sort of fandom are lore and stakes. Lore stakes, and I believe Dylan brought up earlier characters. We were off mic, and good sports have all of those things in spades already. Like, you show up to a fandom, you show up to, like, be like, hey, I want to be like a Minnesota Vikings fan, which, side note, don't do that. That's a good way to get hurt a lot. But you want to be a Minnesota Vikings fan, then you're like, cool. So learn the history of your team. Here's all the wins we have and none of the titles we have. And we just go along for the ride, man. So, yeah, sports rule.
It's also, like, a thing where we talk about, like, when people do a fictional sports story and whatever, and how a lot of the narrative that they pull from is literally just things they've seen. Mm-hmm. You know, you can find any sort of gimmick there. Athlete with a drug issue, athlete who went through terrible injuries, athlete who peaked early, athlete who peaked late. You know, there are countless examples across every sport you can find, and you can take those things and then just make a story out of them, because guess what? They happen in real life.
Yeah, like, one of my favorite things. So recently I've really gotten into to reading old boxing stories, and like, just, this is like a bit of a side tangent, but like, it's one of those things that struck me as like cooler than fiction was the George Foreman Muhammad Ali fight for the title. The context of it was like Muhammad Ali just got stripped of his title because he refused to participate in the Vietnam War, was in his 30s and was fighting his way back to a title. And he had to go past this guy, George Foreman, who was a really, really strong puncher. And so right there, you've just got like an amazing backdrop for like a fight, like the title fight. Everything is on the line. A person that was unfairly, unjustly treated, going up against like the new young person, which, as a side note, that narrative, the like the old, long in the tooth person going up against like a younger, stronger, faster version of themselves, like that happens all the time in sports. Like it happens constantly.
Yeah.
There's a specific moment described from the perspective of George Foreman where Muhammad Ali's like taunting him the entire time and like dodging his punches and like leaning back on the ropes and doing this weird thing they called the rope-a-dope, where like he's not even fighting back, he's just kind of ducking. And Foreman hits him with this right hand that's like has like sunk men to their knees. He's gotten like technical knockouts out of his right hand, so hits him as hard as he can with his right hand. And Muhammad Ali whispers, "Is that all you got, George?" And George Foreman thought to himself in that moment, "Yep, pretty much." And like, that's real. That happened. But like, you can immediately see like, oh man, some scriptwriter is jealous of that line, because like the idea of like, "Is that all you got?" And you think to yourself, yeah, like that's such a humanizing thing. And just, yeah, there's so many examples of those that you can pull from sports history.
Speaking of, like, a writer kind of wrote this better. 2013-14 Premier League season, I believe. It's a freeway race near the end. Chelsea, Liverpool, and Manchester City all gunning for the title. Big game near the end of the season is Liverpool versus Chelsea. Pre-match, captain Steven Gerrard, who is born and bred through Liverpool, local guy, come up now the captain of the team in the twilight of his career, going for his first league title still. He's like 33. In the huddle before the game, he says, "Do not let this slip." In the game, Gerrard receives the ball, goes to turn and slips and gives the ball away to allow an opposition player to score a goal. "Do not let this slip," proceeds to slip.
Yeah.
How was this not written?
It's poetry, man. Like, yeah. It's all poetry. Like, just like, look no further than like this year's Super Bowl with like Taylor Swift and what's his name? Travis Kelce, like that whole like love story narrative that pushed through it. Like, this is why sports rule, right? It's all narrative. You can just like take something and run with it as hard as you can. Like, the team that's down on its luck for the past 30 years and is in the fifth league of the European soccer, it has to like fight their way back up through the leagues to try to compete at the premier levels. Like, American football and a lot of American sports has the draft, which I think as a story mechanic is so ripe for pulling tales from. The idea that the worst team in the league gets the highest pick, so gets the best talent for the next season, and like we'll get some rookie that's the best out of anyone in their things to come aboard and try to make their next season a little bit better. The mechanic I used that exists in sports is what's called the expansion draft, which as soon as I was like, okay, I guess I'm going to write hockey, I looked into the two teams that had done expansion drafts. And expansion draft is fantastic because like teams will have to sit down and be like, we have to protect 7 players on our roster. And then the new team that's coming into the league gets to take anyone else. like any other two players from a roster they could just pull from us. And I was just like, oh man, this is perfect because like this new expansion team, basically you can fill their roster with all these people who are like, I can't believe I wasn't protected by my old team. And I was like, how cool is it to have an entire team of people who feel like they were overlooked? And that became the narrative through line for what I wrote, which is just like the idea of, I cannot believe you let me go. This is what I did for you, all that stuff. And in terms of like struggle and strife, like sports are hard. Then like physically and emotionally and mentally exhausting, being a fan of it is hard. And I say that as like from a very privileged position, but it is true. Like it, like in anything, if you're invested in it, it doesn't go your way, you're devastated by it. Yeah. Like I can tell you where I was when the wide right kickoff, the field goal happened and cost us our shot at with I think the Vikings best team to win the title, and we lost it. I could also tell you where I was when Kawhi Leonard sank the four bounce two pointer to knock out the Sixers and advance us to the fourth round and get our title for the Raptors. Like these moments stick with you, and they're like a weird like unifying thing. In my life, as like just generally living it, I always found that the neutral thing in any conversation is if you can talk about sports and the other person is interested in sports, then it doesn't really matter what other beliefs you have. You can find common ground with being like, hey, man, how about them Mets or whatever you want to say. it's so unifying. And at the same time, like if I see a Packers fan on the street, I don't like them automatically. Like I have to get over my like, oh God, you're a cheesehead. I don't know about this relationship. But yeah. And I don't know. It just rules. Like another small example of like, there's just so many. I'm like scrambling at the moment. So one of the other big examples of like a narrative through line, like, and similar to the don't let it slip proceeds to slip thing, was like Joe Namath on the Jets, who guaranteed everyone that the Jets were going to win the Super Bowl, and then had to stand on the sideline when his team was up in the dying minutes and watch the other team's offense with the ball. And he said later that he was just staring at the clock and praying for it to go faster, because like, you know, when you're a quarterback in football, you are only on the field half of the time. The other half of the time you're watching your defense try to stop their quarterback. So this dude's like, I guarantee a Super Bowl, and it is not in his hands for the last 10 minutes of the game. He has to sit, and he has to watch the entire time and hope his team can do it. And like, all the stuff is organic. You don't have to create that. You don't have to create a world for where that stuff is normal and spend energy on like, and here's what a win is. A win is when, like, you don't have to do any of that. You can just be like, yeah, your sports team, wins are good, losses are bad.
That's actually interesting. It kind of reflects something that I really like about writing fanfic, is that I don't have to sell, you know, the world or the characters to the reader, because, you know, that's why we're here. We're here for this. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of also, it's got that built in, you don't have to sell this to anyone. This is kind of a known constant.
Yeah, they're here because they already like this stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Well, that's why, like, hockey RPF is so, like, RPF for sports is crazy. And I don't mean crazy derogatory. I mean crazy as in, like, there is rabid, dedicated people that write whole fan fictions about real sports teams, and I love each and every one of them for doing it. Like, it is, it makes me feel the same way as that dude who makes all those SpongeBob gangster raps, which, like, you watch it and you're like, this, like, goes really hard, and I'm really happy someone's out here making this. And, like, yeah, there are people who just straight up will do that with hockey teams. And just be like, yeah, you know, here are the two captains of these teams, are lovers. and let's play some hockey or whatever. And I think there's a really famous basketball one with Steph Curry and Kevin Durant kissing right before they win the title. I haven't read it, but like I read the first chapter and I was like, I'm so glad this exists. Like I'm just excited that this exists. Fan fiction is so awesome. It's so awesome, dude. Like so awesome. So happy that we get to just do this stuff, you know?
Another thing I think about when we talk about sports stories is we have to talk about like the layers of narrative.
Mm-hmm.
You have like the last game narrative, your season narrative, like you lost 5 years, and then like the existence of the team, club, person as a whole throughout the entire existence of their career or as a club. You know, there's narratives within, you know, it's built on years and years of things, and you get reputations. You know, this team can't finish. They're really good, but they can't finish. They just can't make it to the end. They always
this player has never been successful. No matter where they go, they've never been successful, and that's that. At a certain point, it's their fault. Like that sort of narrative, also, like, yeah, for sure.
Well, this player appeared was amazing, and then got injured and was never the same.
Yeah, like their career was never the same. Oh my god, that the other thing that I love about sports is that it's one of the only things that I can think of where a team losing can still be a satisfying conclusion. Like they don't have to win the big game. A lot of our most famous sports stories, they don't win. Like they lose. Like the Bad News Bears. Like they come close, but they lose. But they lose with grace and lose with style, and they learn about themselves along the way or whatever. And that's your narrative conclusion. And I think that rules that we're just like okay with a team losing because you lose more than you win.
I mean, my national team, the Welsh football national team, our goal from 1958 onwards was to just make an international tournament. We were not in an international tournament between the years of 1958 to 2016.
Mm-hmm.
And we were just happy to make it to the tournament. And then we came third place. Like, insane.
Yeah, like, the same thing for Canada in basketball. Where it's just like we just want to show up, like we want to be taken seriously on the national stage, this year it looks like it's finally about to happen, and you know I'm normal about it, I'm very normal about this. yeah, what were you about to say, Maya? You seem like you're gearing up for something.
Yeah, just relating to the just wanting to show up. My high school's American football team was dog shit.
Mm.
Like a multi-decade losing streak when I was there. You showed up for the halftime show that the marching band put on, and then you left, which was a very strange experience to someone who was in the marching band. They just wanted to win one, man.
Yeah, sometimes it is about winning one. Like, I don't know, like, because what Dylan's saying is incredibly true, like the layers of narrative, and like you have the team layer, which is the team success, winning or losing, and then you have the layer of history behind that, of the context behind it, and then depending on the team, like so the hockey one that I wrote, like there's like 13 to 15 in real hockey, it's like 30, but there's like 15 people who all have their own narratives. They're like, they have their own things. This person's too slow. This person's has injury history. This person has a style of play that has gone out of style, and they're clinging to an age gone by. This person's really, really good, but terrible as a teammate, and has to learn to like work with other people. And you can have like, you know, that thing where people tell you when you start writing a story, like, hey, what's your overarching like trope that you want to attach to your character? Grabbing a big team sport is like, I'll take all of them. Give me them all. Give me every single one, and I'll throw them in here and assign them out like we're playing Secret Santa, and then I'll have all of them working together. And then the story can be about how all these different personalities gel together. You have coaches, right? Managers, or if we're talking baseball or European football, which I'm just going to start calling football now, and then I'll call American football, American football, because that just feels right. That feels like y'all were first. You guys get the label. anyways, but yeah, like you, and then on top of that, like if you really want to get into the nuts and bolts of it, there's the management narrative, right? Which players are available? Which players will help build a successful team? Who are you drafting next year? Like all of that stuff, you can write a really good story about any one of those people. But writing a story about all of them together and making it about like found family, like that's the other secret sauce about sports stuff, especially team sports. Because like, we're not really talking, we haven't talked yet about like personal sports, like gymnastics, boxing, that sort of thing, which also have their niches and are very, very good. Figure skating, huge. Figure skating is like, there's a huge, upside to that. Tennis too. Oh man. Okay. Anyway, sorry. All the way back. So like, like team sports specifically, what we're talking about is we really are talking about writing a found family story, which always kind of go hard. Cause like you spend so much time with people that like you practice with them, you travel with them, you all are under the same microscope. So you kind of build these relationships with each other that are like more than work relationships. Like these people are coworkers, but like you spend so much time with them and you spend so much time with the media breathing down your neck about it. Cause sports media is vicious and rabid and, brutally unfair most of the time. I've never heard grown men talk about people's weight so much that in sports media, it's insane. But yeah, like you grow to either love them or you grow to hate them. And then that itself is also cause for drama, right? Like there have been multiple, the sport I follow the most is basketball. Basketball is in an era right now of the player empowerment era, where they call it, where people are switching teams constantly. They're just like, I'm out of here. This place blows later. And they force their way out to get traded to some other team where they can try to win somewhere else. And that happens a lot of the time because people just are not compatible as teammates. So like found family or the failure to find family are all things that I think resonate with people, especially in an era where we are talking about choosing your family a lot more. That's a lot more of a conversation. And I think it's really cool to have an entire genre where you can like go and find that. Like you read any sports story and you're reading about how people grow and become part of each other's lives. And yeah, it rules.
You also get like the most famous of sports, and which can happen on the micro or the macro within, you know, which is the underdog.
Yeah,
everyone loves the underdog. And the biggest example, if we want to talk about underdog, you know, there are countless throughout history. You know, people will talk about that USA-USSR hockey game that I don't know about. I've heard about it. But that's about all I know. I know the USSR was scary.
I've been meaning to, like, since getting into hockey, I've been meaning to look up and watch that. Because I remember seeing a short of it in a Lego animation a long time ago, and learning a little bit more about hockey as I have over the last year, and actually getting into this, but I was like, you know what, that might be neat to watch, but it's also one of those things that I just kind of keep putting off doing.
If I may make a recommendation, if you want to learn more about the game, there's a movie called Miracle, which rules. I believe it's called Miracle. Let me fact check myself.
I know they call it the Miracle on Ice.
Yeah. 1980 U.S. Olympic hockey team. Yeah, Miracle. It's 2004, and it's there's a lot of Canada erasure in it, so it's not our favorite movie. And yes, I'm speaking for my country, but it is a really, really faithful and good story with some surprisingly well shot hockey scenes that it doesn't really happen a lot in movies because hockey is pretty hard to shoot because ice. I don't think I needed to explain that it's on ice. But anyway, sorry, Dylan, continue.
but when we do talk about, like, the greatest underdog stories, and we all heard a vision, I still have to go for Leicester City. Mm-hmm. You know, it is a bit of European bias, but it's insane. They were, the betting odds on them winning the Premier League was 5,000 to 1.
It is the single, like, the single highest, like, highest, sorry, lowest odds ever for a team that actually went and did it. Like, it is recorded history, like, the lowest odds.
Wow. I mean,
we have since we started tracking it.
Yeah, 1 to 5,000 is not great.
It is not great. And they were just, they rolled up the sleeves and said, watch this.
The fact that they did it changed betting forever because they will never give that odds again, just in case. Because some people did put money on it, you know, and a small amount of money, but they got paid back for it, you know.
Yeah, I had a friend. Go on, sorry, continue. Finish. No,
betting companies changed their rules because of how unlikely it was.
I had a friend who bet a small amount of money on it, and then when the tide started turning, he put more on it. Like he like double dipped, and he was just like I cannot believe I'm gonna bet. Like, it's a life changing amount of money. But yeah, like betting. Okay, so gambling is a whole other facet that has emerged from the past, like specifically the last 5 years. Of, like, betting being a side sports, and you have, like, if you want to talk about, like, different plot points that can emerge, like, betting scandals and, like, referee scandals and, like, villains emerge in your story really, really easily, right? Like, teams have rivalries where you have this team and this team do not like each other. And what's fascinating about that is it has nothing to do with the players most of the time. Like, if you ask any Colorado, it's Colorado Avalanche do not like the Detroit Red Wings for shit that happened in the 2000s. None of the players playing for either of those teams were, like, involved in the initial scuffles, but everyone still is like, nah, we don't like those guys. Like, you show up to the Colorado Avalanche and they're like, hey, welcome to the Avalanche. First things first, we don't like Detroit. It's just like, that's like the thing you learned when you go on into that program. And like, yeah, like, so stuff like that, but also referees, like, sports has a thing with officials all the time about, like, was the call right? Was the call wrong? There's like been recorded cases of certain teams getting officiated differently because of the style they play. Or the players they have, or in some cases, just having mouthy players. Draymond Green on the Golden State Warriors is just guaranteed his team is going to have a terrible whistle for the rest of his career because he can't shut up. that did sound like a hot take, but Draymond Green literally punched a guy in the face a couple seasons ago, so, like, I have no sympathy for that man. there are these, when I say it's easy mode, that's what I mean. Like, it is hard. It's challenging to write a team sport, in my opinion, because of the thing I mentioned earlier of, like, you are juggling a lot of personalities. Now you can turn up the volume on them or turn them down however you want. Like, my solution was I just committed to writing a shit ton of words about it. I was like, all right, well, I guess I'm strapped in. You don't have to, like, turn the volume all the way up so that everyone gets their fair shot. Like, big organization stories where everyone gets their time in the limelight. I think conventional wisdom says that you lose something when you focus on all those people. And I kind of disagree with that. I think that, like, if you're going to write a team sport and you want to do, like, a good immersive job, you kind of have to have everyone's perspective. Like, it can't just be from the perspective of your star, because they're not the only person on the team. And, like, every good quarterback in history will say the first thing about their success is that their offensive line is really good. They get lots of protection. And that's why they're able to do what they do. In football, a lot of really, really good forwards get the opportunities they do because of their midfielders, right? The conventional wisdom is build from the forwards and work your way back. Cause it's like, yeah, you still got to get the cross through, and your strikers need to have the opportunities to strike the ball, and the only way they get that is if their defense is any good. So, like, it all becomes a thing of, like, everyone contributes, and if you make everyone's contributions to a story valuable, I think it sucks a reader in even more.
Yeah. I also want to note on rivalries, it's so fascinating because a rivalry can be something as little as, you know, we are from the same area.
Yeah.
They're from over there and we're from over here and we don't like them because
the battle of the blank.
Yeah. Or you can have something that's more ideological even, mm-hmm. you know. You can get stuff like Celtic and Rangers, which is based on whether you are like more pro-union or, you know, sort of like relates back to Irish Catholic, you know, Protestantism and Catholicism in yeah. Britain. And it's like people have died over this sporting rivalry. You have crazy ones like in South America with River Plate and Boca Juniors, where like some of their games are not allowed to be played on that continent because it's too violent. They move it to Spain.
That's amazing. Oh
God,
my God.
Damn. That's... Yeah,
there is nothing more violent than a football rivalry. Like, well and truly, it is crazy. Like, cause I was about to add on to that, be like, oh, you know, or like the 2000s Lakers and Spurs. But, like, that's nowhere near the level you're talking about, Dylan. But, like, that rivalry is based on the fact that, like, I just keep fucking seeing these guys. Every time we go for a title run, you're here. And you're in our way. And we have to go through you every time. And it's annoying. Just stop. Get out of here.
It's like, it's like the difference between, like, a competitive rivalry and, like, a historical rivalry. Because you get those anyway. It's like this one event we can point to and go, we are the two best teams and we are constantly facing each other in the top, mm-hmm. you know. And that's what makes a rivalry is it's a one-upsmanship. It's who's better, who gets more titles, who's number one, who's number two. Other times it's just like, we hate you because of something that happened a long time ago and we will never forget it.
Yeah, like, one of the most storied rivalries on North American sports is the Celtics versus the Lakers, right? And that rivalry has been reignited from time to time, but, like, early on, they didn't really have much to do with each other. It was like the Celtics won a shit ton way back when basketball started and everyone was wearing Converse and no one dribbled the ball. And then as the product got better, you got, like, the Showtime Lakers with Magic Johnson, and then you got Kobe Bryant and Shaquille O'Neal, and then you had the Anything Is Possible Celtic run in 08 that made it so we have to listen to Doc Rivers talk for some reason because he won one title. I said that I wasn't going to complain on this one much, but I lied.
Just an aside on punditry. Don't give any professional a job on punditry, okay?
As soon as you win one title, it's like, well, I guess you have to be in media forever. It's like,
in English football, they'll give it one to any guy who played in the top flight. If you were in there for one season, they go, eh, you're probably good enough to speak about football.
Like, right. Like, it's like, how are we vetting these guys? Like, because one of my favorite analysts of basketball is J.J. Redick. And it's like, J.J. Redick was never the best player on any team. Like, he was like a 3-and-D guy. Like, he hucked the rock as soon as he got it into his hands. But he got the most out of his ability, like 15 seasons in the league. And, like, because he wasn't the best, he got to, like, watch the game from the bench a lot, and like that turns out to be really helpful when it comes to breaking down a sport for people.
Yeah It's also a thing though, like there's the entire narrative that your sporting career doesn't end when you retire as a player.
Yeah,
you can go into coaching, you can go into, you're still a personality, you're still associated with what came before you in your playing career. Mm-hmm. And especially with managers, the biggest narrative around football managers is mostly the best managers were not the best professional players.
No, that's true of most sports. Usually it's guys who are not guys. It's usually people who have played a long time, had a long career, but a long career of like managing a locker room, you know, or like people who observed a lot. Like Steve Kerr on the Warriors is one of the best coaches we have, and like he was like the 15th man on the 07 Spurs. Like he never saw playing time. But like he is really good because he was in those locker rooms where he had to manage personalities and like be a good teammate and like focus on things that wasn't basketball, because when you're a manager or a coach, a lot of your job is babysitting. Like a lot of your job is like calming people down or hyping people up, or like it's X's and O's as part of it. But the other part of it is like, I need energy. You guys are flat. I need you guys to like step it up here, or identify mistakes, or motivate a player, or discover talent. Like Michael Jordan owns a basketball team. He is the worst talent scout ever. Like he is so bad at it. Isaiah Thomas ran a basketball team for 4 years and is like probably the second or third best point guard ever in basketball history. Did a horrible job. But like the theory behind that is like these guys played the game for so long at a high level and were really good individually. But like when you're on the court, I don't think you can see it as well. Versus like
one of the biggest things that I noticed listening about Thierry Henry. Thierry Henry is one of the best French footballers of all time.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest problem with him is he doesn't realize that not everyone else is also him.
Yeah.
that the players you are coaching have limitations, that they can't do what you did,
mm-hmm.
and you should try to play to their strengths instead of trying to make them do what you did.
Yeah.
And that's what one of the biggest notices, and it is a thing that a world-class athlete will never get, is that people aren't you. And that's what makes someone who is, you know, Pep Guardiola is considered the best football manager right now. He was a really good player, mm-hmm. but he was never the best. He was a midfielder for Barcelona. The second best is Jurgen Klopp, who never played in the top division of Germany. He was a second division player. But you just see that these guys figure it out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And guys like Graham Potter, who was like, oh yeah, I'll coach a university team while I'm doing my degree in this like emotional science and all this. and then he goes on to manage in like foreign countries, which no other English manager does, and then comes back and is like a hot commodity with new ideas, and like gives like the idea of English managers that maybe it's better to go off and learn things than be thrown in at the deep end of the club I used to play at.
Yeah, like, so we're touching on another thing that I think is really fascinating about sports in general, and that's just, like, the idea of being a professional athlete is f***ing weird. Like, it's weird. It's a weird job. Like, so think about the life cycle of it. You start really young, you specialize, and you train your entire childhood and young adulthood in this specific sport, doing what you do. And if you're amazing, if you're really, really good at it, teams will notice you, pick you up, you get to play it. And your lifespan, I mean, the lifespan of a professional player is getting longer with, like, medical science advancing.
We're talking about adding 4 years.
Exactly. Like, and ultimately, it's, like, from the time you're in your 20s till, like, if you're really lucky, 40, 45, like, that is the time span we're dealing with, which is only 20 years, like 20, 25 years. Most professions, if you're planning to make a career, you can go a lot longer than that. Like, you can sell auto glass till you're 30, right? Like, for 30 years, if you want to.
I mean, for me, for what I'm going into, I'll be getting things started at the age most professional players retire.
Yeah. So, like, it is a weird thing. And then, suddenly, it's over. You're 43, your knees ache in ways no one else will understand.
Your back is gone.
Your back is gone, and all you know, all you've ever known, is playing your sport your entire life. And there's a moment of, like, now what? I've heard a lot of athletes, like, I heard about this athlete who retired from basketball. He would wake up at 5 a.m., this is first year of retirement. He'd wake up at 5 a.m. He'd work out still. And then he would just drive around LA for 3 hours because he just didn't have anything else to do. Like, he'd drive constantly because he's like, you work 18 hours a day for your goal, and suddenly you just don't have a goal anymore. So, like, what do you do? And that's why so many people go back to the sport. They go back to management. They go back to analyzing. They go back to TV if they're charismatic or if they're not charismatic. It turns out you don't need to be anything to be on TV. You just need to be associated with the sport. But yeah, like, and all of this stuff makes for an incredibly unique perspective for a story to be told from. Like, it was a point that I hit a lot when I wrote my thing of just like, you know, this idea of being incredibly old at 40, like, not like being a grandfather at 40 to your peers who are like, wow, you're 40. You must be almost retired, huh? And then you're like, yeah, I guess so. Even though that's not how the rest of the world operates. Like, it's crazy and very fascinating.
It's, I mean, I'm seeing players start playing that are younger than I am.
Yep.
And it's wild, especially because I know they're making more money than I'll ever see.
The other part is everyone's hot and rich, right? Like, so, like, there's a couple of interesting ways to, like, if you want to be, like, I think it's a lot of fun to play with perspective when, as a writer. And when you're handed an entire universe where everyone is hot and rich, it means that you could pretty much do whatever you want with their story. Like, yeah, they got money. They could fly around, do whatever that you want to do. It's like making someone a pop star. You automatically unlock a side of life that most people want to see because it's so unique and weird.
So out of reach as well.
Yep.
But we talk about, like, we've talked a lot about team sports, but then you have, like, more individual ones. Like, you get stories about different people, and like, as a wrestling fan, I've heard through the MMA vine, that's mostly where I've heard from because they're so interconnected, you know. And you look at guys like Conor McGregor and like his career, and you're just like, what happened here?
Yeah, like my favorite thing to go to with like personal sports, like professional sports that are personal, is the Williams sisters. Who, like, and Usain Bolt is another one. Like, those ideas of, like, so your entire professional career was being alone a ton, right? Like, Serena Williams and Venus Williams' career was just, they got to play each other, but for the most part, they're hitting balls against a wall the vast majority of their training sessions. And, like, that's got to be pretty isolating. Like, it's just like you're just alone hitting a ball against a wall, working on very, like, small things about your game. Like, just, like, changing tiny tweaks and, like, micro muscle movements and just, like, adjusting your mechanics to the point where, like, you can do it for a long, long time. And Usain Bolt at least had a team. Like, track and field is you're in a crew of people. But the only person he had out there was him and how fast he could run. And, like, that was all he had to focus on.
Yeah, he had his mates on the relay sometimes that he was probably participating.
Yeah.
And that's the mode. It's the guy who gives him the baton and he hands the baton too.
Yeah, like, but like, that's it. Like, and when you're, Michael Phelps is another one because swimming is so isolating. Like, you're in a team, but you're competing alone. Like, your crew isn't in your ear cheering you on, calling plays for you. You're just swimming as fast as you can. And all of their stories are a lot of, like, they all have very weird relationships with their trainers and their coaches and stuff, because it's a lot of one-on-one sessions. And like, that's a whole other aspect of sports that's, like, really interesting.
So I was just thinking about, like, talking about coaches and stuff. No, my favorite one is always a parent coach. You know, Ronda Rousey's story, because she was so involved in, like, the explosion in, like, popularity of women's professional fighting in the UFC, then came to WWE and all. Not you know, it's like you talk about your mom and you talk about, oh, yeah, my mom, so great. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, this woman is horrible. you'd wake your daughter by putting her in an armbar? What?
Like, yeah. Huh? There is another aspect of like the generational athlete is always fascinating.
Yeah.
Like just like my parent was a professional athlete. And so I too am now a professional athlete following in their footsteps. And like, it's like everyone's worst fear of your mom being involved in your social life. except
oh God,
she woke you up with an arm bar this morning.
So. Like if you want to see that in like any better detail about how bad that can be, the wrestling movie, The Iron Claw, just came out. Fantastic movie. Zac Efron acts his socks off. But it shows that, you know, it's the story of the Von Erich family.
Doesn't that also have, what's his name in it? It has, yeah, this is just full of people that I love.
Yeah. it's a fantastic film that tells the Von Erich family story, which is a super depressing story that is somehow more depressing in real life because they had to cut out one of the brothers.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Damn.
So, like, you see stories like this and how parenting as well works with sports stories. And it's when we go away from, like, the career aspect into even the personal aspect and when those things mix together, mm-hmm. you talk about that.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of times, you know, you hear about, like, a football player like Ian Wright who's like, yeah, I started working, you know, I had like this terrible childhood and all this, and I started working as like a bricklayer, and I decided, no, I can't do this. So I decided at 22 years old to become a professional footballer, and I was one of the best.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's like you hear stories like this, and you're just like, wow.
Yeah, like, I think it was Ray Rice who got his skills to be the greatest wide receiver in American football history because his dad was a bricklayer. And back in the day, they would just throw bricks to each other up a ladder because they didn't have any other way of getting them up and down. So Ray Rice just like at like 10 was whipping bricks, like his dad was whipping bricks to him, and he would just be catching them to lay them on like big walls and stuff. And I was like, so that's the training regimen? Like, how do you recommend that training regimen to, like, new athletes? They're like, all right, yeah. So step one, your dad, gotta be a bricklayer. Step two, throw bricks at your child. Like, it's insanity, man.
It's like the Mr. Miyagi thing. It's like, this only works in this one situation.
Yeah.
Like, beyond here, this can never happen again. This is a unique set of circumstances that crafted an individual who is awesome.
I know that we're talking about actual sports here, but sports narrative wise, can we all like talk about Mr. Miyagi for a second?
Sure.
In terms of like, that guy's a hack. like, bro, what the f- are you talking about? How is this going to help me in a fight? Anyway.
And then, you know, Daniel hits an illegal kick. And then we cut to, you know, 30 years later, and Cobra Kai is an awesome TV show.
Cobra Kai's so good, dude. Oh, my God. It's so good.
It's the insanity of, like, if they had transformation sequences, I could see this being a Power Rangers show.
I love the... I know a lot of people got off the boat in season two with the whole high school, like, kung-fuing each other. I was so in. I was right there with them. I was like, let's go! I was so excited. Oh, man.
And it just keeps on escalating.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's, like, the best thing. But anyways, yeah, that's an example of how sports stories are good. Like, Cobra Kai. It's about the villains. You know, sports villains. But I don't think the only thing that I think we haven't really touched on well, and I think like you could probably hear it in Dylan and I's voices because we have the timber and exhaustion and excitedness of people who have been fans of sports teams for a long, long time. We could hear it in each other. But like fandom in sports is crazy, especially nowadays, right? Like, so picture all the ferality that you and your friends have for fictional character A, whether that be like Karlach from Baldur's Gate 3 or Shadowheart from Baldur's Gate 3 or Asterion from Baldur's Gate 3 or most of the cast from Baldur's Gate 3. But imagine like actually going to Shadowheart's Instagram and telling her directly how desirable you think her qualities are. And that sports fandom, like, there is a niche for everything. There are warnings about fans who are like, I'm actively trying to parent trap a person so that I can try to like wife him because he makes a ton of money playing sport A. There are fans who have sent death threats to people's families because of the outcome of games. And like, so if we talk about things of like building tension in a narrative, sports fans are psychotic. A lot of them are amazing. Like, I love the fact that the Buffalo Bills fans jump through tables and donate to charities of teams they don't like. Like, that's their, like, MO. Yeah, the Buffalo Bills fans, when they win, they will set up plastic tables and jump through them like a wrestling match. Like, it is unhinged, and it's great.
Fascinating.
Bills Mafia, man, they're insane. But, like, yeah, like, there, for every wholesome story, there's also a lot of horror stories. And I think, like, sports stories allow you to have this nefarious villain in your story that, like, you don't necessarily need to spend a ton of time developing if you don't want to. If you do want to, by all means, go ham. But, like, fans in general, people are aware of who they are, of what they stand for. And there's a lot of crazy, crazy stories about specifically football fans. like, actively fighting one another, and my team doesn't like your team, so I don't like you, which, I mean, I don't like Packers fans, so, you know, like, I get it, but, like, yeah, it's just this, it's this crazy little, like, mini side plot that's always happening of, like, how is your fandom going to express itself in,
I mean,
sports?
Like, just to make, like, a wrestling note, like, there's, like, the ECW fandom, mm-hmm. which was, you know, that grunge, anti-authority, we want to see you bleed, we want to see you do this, and we will stand up and be your biggest supporters, or we will be your biggest haters.
Yeah.
Like, it's that, like, extreme swinging fandom, whereas in modern day, you pretty much get, like, the curated family-friendly fandom. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, I mean, I don't even watch American football. I think perhaps the last Super Bowl I paid any attention to was the one the Colts won. I don't even know what year that was.
They won twice, oh, shit. I think.
Ah, that's... So I see I'm not being helpful at all then.
One of the Colt ones.
Yeah, Peyton Manning, right?
Yeah, Manning. And I have beef with Eagles fans.
Mm-hmm. I mean, who doesn't?
Mainly because in the middle of a conference I was attending, and actually I was helping run this conference, a swarm of them walked through the convention center and made a shit ton of noise.
I mean, it's the Eagles. What do you expect?
No one likes us. No one likes us. No one likes us. We don't care because we're Philly, f***ing Philly. No one likes us. We don't care.
Another thing to criticize, European chants are far better.
Yeah, well, that's just stolen from one of your guys, isn't it?
Yeah, probably.
Oh, man. This shit has been here before us. It'll be here long after us.
This is my Roman Empire.
Oh, man.
Yeah, Dylan, that makes sense for you. You're a football manager player.
Yeah.
Oh, so you're that kind of psycho.
I haven't played that much this year.
This year. So what's your total? What's your body count?
Oh, my hours.
Yeah, what's your body count?
So I've
been
playing since 16. Let me see. 600 hours in 19, 560 in 21, 552 in 22, nearly 516, 300 in, over 350 in 23. 2020, I had 361, 17, 172, and 18, 170. So, like, 2,000 hours or so, you know, like 3,000 hours, maybe.
Right.
That's not that bad.
Yeah, I mean, what, did you just say it's not that bad?
Yes.
I'll send a...
I guess it is Maya saying it's not that bad. So, like, I assume Maya's got a body count of, like, 60,000 hours in Arma or something. Yeah, like that.
I really don't want to reveal how many hours I have in Arma and Destiny.
There's my most played games and their hours attached.
I love RimWorlds just sneaking in there. RimWorld and Crusader Kings 3, which honestly are the football of video games.
Yeah.
It's like, what is RimWorld but Football Manager by another name, truly?
Yeah, it just involves slightly less cannibalism.
My stepdad used to get insanely frustrated with me because I played a ton of NBA 2K.
Mm-hmm.
And then whenever I have friends over, I would never list it among an options as a multiplayer game. I'd just be like, yeah, I've got like Halo or whatever, like we can play whatever. And my friends would be like, my stepdad would go, why don't you ever play like 2K against them? Like, you play that game all the time. You probably like beat them or whatever. I was like, oh, I don't actually play that. I just like make a team and try to make my draft really good and then simulate till the end and see if my team won or not. And if it doesn't win, I go back to the draft and try to like draft new players or whatever. And I didn't know that there were games that were just coming down the pipe that were just going to be that. Otherwise, yeah, I'd be
management simulators.
I'd be way more excited as a kid. Like, well, fuck 2K. Like, give me football manager, basketball manager.
Yeah.
For the reason,
yeah, I bought.
Go on.
I bought one of the FIFA games. I want to say it was 15.
Yeah.
Because my dad's always been a huge. I guess for convention's sake, I'll just say football. He's always been a huge football fan, so I wanted to. And of course, being me, I've loved video games, so I wanted to connect with him over that. I didn't entirely realize that. The games were kind of not great.
They're bad games, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
As a product, they're not very good, but that's because they don't have to be, because, again, capitalism, right? Like, they haven't had to make a good sports game for a long-ass time, because there is no competition, because they have all the players' names and likenesses, everyone's going to buy it anyway, so they don't give a shit. Which is super fucking unfortunate, because it'd be awesome to get some new mechanics in here, not, like, whatever, grinding for trading cards or whatever the fuck FIFA has become now.
Buy more cards.
Yeah, it's really, it's just like, sports fans would get upset to listen, to hear this, but sports fans, if you're out there, I want you to know that this is true. What I'm about to say is very true. You're playing Magic the Gathering, and you just don't fucking know that. But you are. That's what you're doing. You're playing Magic the Gathering, so you're not allowed to consider them nerds anymore. You're the nerd. You've been playing Magic the Gathering for like 5 years. And anyway, no one wants to know about your Cristiano Ronaldo card. Actually, Magic the Gathering fans would be pretty excited about it.
Yeah, tell them about the different stats he's got.
Yeah.
And how he's better than the Messi card.
Yeah, which, I mean, do you have thoughts on that, Dylan? Is that sacrilegious?
Messi's far and away better.
All right.
That's it. How are we for today, Maya? Yeah.
What are you thinking, Maya? Was this entertaining?
This was very entertaining.
I'm glad. it's like, okay, this episode can't air.
Well.
All right. Before we get going... Badger, do you have anything you'd like to promote to our listeners?
Not really, man. Just like go Vikings, go Raptors. Eventually, I'm planning on releasing a book that I'm working on right now, but like that's down the road. Just follow these excellent gentlemen and lady.
Our next episode out will be on wrestling, as we've kind of talked about a little bit. Dylan is just a smidgen obsessed and has been subjecting Ian and I to some wrestling. And then we're going to talk about it.
Yeah.
Well, folks, I am and have been Maya, pronouns she, her. And today I was joined by...
Dylan.
Badger? I didn't know if it was my turn. Yeah, Badger, he, they.
And I am Ian. Until next time, bye.